Blog Talk Radio.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter, at Joy Keys. Also check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. You can also email me. I'm Saturdays with Joy Keys at hotmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Suggestions, comments, they're all welcome. I'm going to be doing some giveaways. I have a book we're going to be discussing today. Black women and breastfeeding. Any controversy there? How did you learn about breastfeeding? What did you know about breastfeeding? Is breastfeeding better than formula, or were you told that formula is best? Did you put a little alcohol in the formula to help the baby sleep? We're going to be talking about all of that today. I have a researcher, professor of law at the University of Hawaii, William S. Richardson School of Law. She's the recipient of the 2020-21 Fulbright King's College London Research Scholar Award. She wrote a book called Skimmed, Breastfeeding, Race, and Injustice. I also have a guest, Jabina G. Coleman, and she's a licensed social worker, and she is a licensed international board certified lactation consultant. She was on the show before, and she's going to be helping us talk about the situation of breastfeeding and racism. I think they're both on the show, the lines right now. Ladies, are you here?
I'm here.
Yes,
this
I am.
Jabina.
I'm here. Yes, Jabina's here.
Andrea, are you here?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you so much, ladies,
Excellent.
Both of you, for calling in this morning.
Thank
it's
you
such
for having
you being here.
I was like, anybody? Crickets? Hello? Hello?
And great to meet you, Jabina, over the airwaves.
Same here, Andrea.
Yes, I thought it would be great to have Jabina on. She was here before, but she has, like, immense amount of experience dealing with women and breastfeeding. But I'm going to start with you, Andrea, and I want to start with the fact that you're a white woman, and you're writing this book about African-American women's experience in breastfeeding. Why? What drove you to this?
Okay, great. Thanks for asking that, and thanks for putting that right up front. So we can just get it out.
get it out in the open.
Yeah, exactly. The question on everybody's mind. So I do work and have been doing work for a long time on what I call food oppression, which is the cooperation between government and corporations that leads to racial health disparities. And these disparities are often explained away by racial stereotypes, or myths about personal responsibility that obscure the structural nature of the oppression that leads to these disparities. Mm. So in that research, I have spent a lot of time thinking about milk and the way that milk is a symbol of white supremacy, and milk is pushed on us by the government, even though most people, and especially people of color, cannot digest milk. Mm-hmm. So while researching milk, I started looking at breast milk. And while doing that, I came across the story of the Fultz sisters, who are called the famous Fultz Quads, and their story is central to the book. They were born in North Carolina in the 1940s. Their mother was Black and Cherokee. She was not able to hear or speak. And she gave birth to these girls who were the first recorded Black identical quadruplets. Now, they had a white doctor who was racist, And he decided that he was going to seize the opportunity of these miraculous girls who became instant celebrities and use them to conduct experiments on. So he named them after his own family members, and then he conducted a bidding war with formula companies to become their corporate godfather. And they mm-hmm. became the first black models for formula. And so this, you know, new campaign affected a lot of black families who then decided to take on formula or supported the decision that they had to make because, you know, they had to work and other things. So I went to see if, you know, what had been written about them, and there was very mm-hmm. little out there.
Yeah.
And I found this story so fascinating and so important, you know, that they had been exploited throughout their whole lives, and nobody knew about it. So
I didn't know about it. I'm so glad that you did. I was excited. I saw the cover, and then I was like, well, she said racism, and I'm thinking, I'm going to read this nice little story about these four girls. And I started reading, and I was happy, and then I got sad, and then I got mad, and then I was like, damn, oh, here we go. Okay, here we're going to talk about that. So, you know, let me ask Jabina, I wanted to talk to her, what are some of the myths you might have heard when you were growing up about breastfeeding, or did you even hear about breastfeeding when you were growing up as a young girl?
So first, I would love to say Andrea's book, as a lactation consultant and a mentor in the lactation community, this is one of the books that I recommend to all birth workers and folks who are interested in the lactation professional because of the historical context that comes with it. To answer your question around like my experience with breastfeeding, no, breastfeeding wasn't a conversation we had actually. In my family, I was the first to have amongst my generation, the first to have a baby. And I'm Caribbean, and so breastfeeding, it wasn't a question if I was going to breastfeed or not, because mm-hmm. culturally that is what we do, is breastfeed. So that wasn't the issue. I think the issue came when, after having my son, not having access to resources and the support needed to sustain breastfeeding. And so my introduction to breastfeeding was when I was in undergrad doing, and this was around Healthy People 2010 at the time, so this was 2003, and the statistics around breastfeeding disparities and, you know, Healthy People 2010 goals at the time, and I was just so baffled, like, so why aren't black women breastfeeding? And I was currently pregnant with my son, who's now 17, and was like, I'm going to breastfeed. Like, this is something, you know, and not really having access to, not having resources and support available to me. Not that my family and partner at the time wasn't supportive, but it was the access and accessibility.
Andrea, in your book, you talk about this issue. Really, the mother of the four folks, sisters, she was like backed into a corner from day one with this doctor who I wanted to, and I'm not really a violent person, strangle as I continued to read the book, with his dealings with this company, the pet formula company. Now, they did a lot for this family, so to speak, but they did more for the doctor. In your experience, do you think formula companies are still manipulating women's choices today, Andrea?
Absolutely. I think their marketing tactics are so insidious. No, they'll use pictures of people breastfeeding, but then give a message that formula is actually better. And they prey on people's insecurities about whether they have enough milk and, you know, normal behavior of babies, like maybe they don't sleep all the time, or, you know, maybe they cry, and they're, you know, and they try to kind of pathologize that to
when you
make
were
people
having your
feel
child,
like there's a problem. Yeah.
When you were having your child, you talk about that a little bit in the book. Did you feel that way? Can you tell the audience, did you feel that way when after you gave birth and you're in the hospital? Were there posters? Were there signs about formula? Did the doctor or nurses talk to you about formula? Or did they were like, oh, you should breastfeed and this is how you do it?
Well, so I had twins, and they were very premature. They came at 31 weeks, and so I didn't have any milk. And so I had to give them formula. They were in the NICU for a month, and I was trying and trying and trying to get enough milk. You know, my entire day would be pumping and trying to put one on the breast and then the other one on the breast and then, like, feeding them whatever I pumped and then doing this and then doing it all over again, right? Like, they'll tell you it takes 11 hours a day to breastfeed. So one baby with two, it's 22.
Yeah.
All day. That was just all like, that was life, all day, all night.
Jabina, is this a story you might have heard when people have premature babies? Is it a problem them expressing milk for their children, or what is your experience with that? Is that something that you've heard?
I think the problem, yes, it's an experience that a lot of new parents with twins and preemies and just babies in general experience is the how much milk do I have, right? Trusting the process of, like, you know, do I have enough milk to feed this, to feed my baby? And I think some of the anxiety around that comes from really not being prepared of what to expect. And so oftentimes people are not educated in the prenatal period about, you know, what to expect during the postpartum period and what lactation and breastfeeding consists of. And how much time it takes and the patience that comes with it. And I think Andrea mentioned, right, so normal baby patterns, what does that look like? And so when we think about babies nursing around the clock, also oftentimes people think that I'm insufficient. I don't have enough breast milk. I can't, you know, breastfeed enough. I don't have it. And people are often used to seeing milk in bottles, right? And we're used to seeing 2 ounces and 3 ounces, and we're able to quantify it that way. But, you know, I think there's this lack of understanding, education around what to expect in the first, especially in the first few weeks of life.
Now, Andrea, in your book, you talk about...
Sorry. I just wanted to say, like, everything Jabina is saying is just so perfect because she's really talking about how there's no choice involved, right? And a lot of what I think about is how the issue is framed as one of choice, right? And there's a sort of racist approach to it, saying, oh, black women just don't want to breastfeed, or they make that choice, or their families make that choice, when it's really all of these structural factors, right? It's not that people are uneducated. It's that doctors aren't trained, right? People aren't trained when they should be to give that advice. What you need if you're going to breastfeed, like, you know, pumps or you know, bottles and all the things that come with it, that's not available. So it's really the support from outside that is making the choice, but then it's framed as a personal choice.
Right. And I also think what also isn't discussed as well is the historical context around wet nursing, the historical trauma around breastfeeding
Andrea
that isn't
discussed. Jabina, in her book, she discusses about, you know, the early settlers, they came and they were using wet nurses, and then that was put aside, and then people started using African-American women as slaves, and they would take them to nurse white children, but they were not able to nurse their own children. But Andrea also discusses a system that was created with African-American women where they co-nursed. So if a woman, you know, was away from her child, the other woman may nurse her child. So that was a beautiful thing, and that was a great communal situation. But Andrea, in the book about the sisters, the false sisters, the babies were actually taken from the mother. And we think that was, okay, that happened back then. Back then, this white man was able to get the babies taken. He gave them to the nurse. I think her name was Elma, correct? and they were raised by Elma. So these kids were taken from the mother. She couldn't really see them, and as they got older, the time and space between them got larger. But even today, there was recently a story in the news about this American Idol, one of the people who were on the show, Saisha Mercado, and authorities had taken her baby because she brought them to the hospital. She brought the baby to the hospital and wasn't able to get enough milk. This is today. This is 2021. And I think the kid
was taken
from her family twice.
History.
Andrea, have
this
you
is
seen
all still
this?
Happening.
Yeah, it's still happening.
It's still happening. And
what
it,
is the recourse
still
in the
happening?
Book.
And I think to the point with Saisha as well is that she turned to the medical system for support in weaning her 1 year old. And again, the system failed her based off of their lack of knowledge and support around breastfeeding.
Andrea, you're a professor of law. What recourse would somebody today have, an African American woman today, in a situation such as Saisha's, where they took the baby because from a social worker perspective, this child was being neglected? That's what they saw, supposedly. What is your suggestion as a professor of law?
Yeah, I wish I had easy answers. I mean, it's definitely something that should be challenged, but I think that, you know, my intention in writing the book and sharing the information is to raise awareness so that that is not the approach that's taken, because these ideas are so ingrained in the system that it's hard to fight, right? And maybe in one individual case. I wanted to mention Tabitha Walrond, who is another Black woman that I write about in the book, who had a very tragic story as well, that she was told by the doctors that it would be fine for her to breastfeed, and the Medicaid didn't get her a card because they messed up through their system. No doctor would see her child, and he died on the way back to the emergency room 7 weeks after he was born, because she couldn't breastfeed but was told that she could and there wasn't enough. And even though when that happened to white women, there were changes in the system and there was outrage and the women were upheld as heroes, she was prosecuted for homicide and then vilified in the press. So,
and you talk about in your book, the Chicago Hope show, use the story but put a white woman as the character.
Yes, exactly.
So that people were mad at the system, they were mad at the hospital, and not at the mother in the Chicago Hope story, you know?
Exactly.
And this brings me to the industry and the U.S. government. And in your book, you talk about the U.S. government spends $68 million buying formula, if I'm correct, and the industry spends $484 million on promotion. Am I understanding that?
Yes, I don't have the exact numbers, but that's about right.
Yes,
so exactly.
Where is the choice? I'll go back to choice then. If all this money is being spent to push these things down women's throats, as this is your only option or this is the best option, then where is the choice? Jabina, in your experience, do you feel that this is being shoved down women's throats, and is it being shoved down African-American women or women of color more than their counterparts, Jabina?
Yeah, I think that it is. And the fact that, you know, the marketing is selling, you know, selling formula. And what we also see is in marginalized communities, in areas where folks, one, have to return back to work and school sooner, where there isn't enough support around, you know, parenting and breastfeeding in the fourth trimester, in the postpartum period,
And so it also shows that this is like the only option for you, the easiest option. And a lot of the work that I do is creating spaces so that folks have community, have a village of support people to help through this process. And it is heavy lifting. We know that Black women and brown women, marginalized communities are targeted. And so it takes a lot of on-the-ground work, but this is where policy work comes in, and a lot of education. And it's systemic across the board.
Andrea, can you talk to the audience? You wrote about TANF and the 13th Amendment. Talk to the audience. What's the connection there? Why did you put those two things? I know, but I want you to talk to the audience.
Yeah, of course. So when the government changed welfare rules, right, in the late 1990s, then they made it so that a state who gives out welfare could insist that women go back to work right after giving birth, basically making it impossible for them to breastfeed and forcing them to do work outside the home instead of inside the home, right? Because we all know those are both work, and often inside is harder.
Exactly.
Right?
I'm a mother. I know. Yes.
Okay. So what I talk about is the disproportionate impact that has on Black women and how it relates back to the period of enslavement when enslaved Black women were forced to leave their infants, right, to do work. And we have the 13th Amendment that said that is not okay, right? No more slavery. And that's been interpreted to mean you cannot force people to do work, right? Instead of just maybe a literal enslavement that we had back then. But this rule from TANF, which is the name for welfare, is forcing women into work and having this outsized impact on Black women, which also connects it back to the reason that we have the 13th Amendment in the first place. So I argue in the book that it violates the 13th Amendment to enact this, what we call like a vestige of slavery in the present.
I remember when my daughter was born and I wanted to go back to school, and they had the subsidized childcare. And so I was like, oh, great. I'll be able to go back to school. I'll be able to get the subsidized childcare. And they were like, no, you have to work. Like, I think it was at the time, this was years ago, my daughter's grown, but I think it was like 28 hours a week or something in order to get subsidized childcare. And I was like, but I'm trying to go back to school. Like, isn't this what you guys want? You want me to, like, you're always talking about nobody wants to better themselves. And we're sucking it literally, almost we could put a picture of a breast and I'm sucking the system dry, if you will. Okay. So you're not going to help me get ahead. You just want me to work somewhere at an hourly wage job that is not going to allow me to go back to school. I won't have time to do anything.
Real training, skill training or education on the job, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's like a dead end, and you can only make a certain amount of money, and if you go $1 over, I mean, literally, I've been there. If you go $1 over, whatever the guideline is, you will not get any benefits that month. They will literally cut you off. So you're, like, at the whim of this system, and you can never, like, climb out. Even though I did, I was able to, thank God. But, it's not easy. Jabina, in your experience with women who have worked with women who are on TANF, and what has been your experience helping them try to breastfeed or formula feed? What has been your experience with that?
I think so. Now we're seeing that women who are on TANF oftentimes are also on WIC, and WIC does have a new breastfeeding package that they're offer to breastfeeding and lactating folks, and so. It is hard, and I think these are the folks that we often see who are working
lower wage jobs and don't have the time. Oftentimes these jobs don't have space for folks to pump, enough time to take breaks so that they can, you know, pump their breast milk. And so a lot of what I do with folks in this situation is preparing, talking to your provider, talking to your manager or superior in regards to what this will look like when you return back to work or school. And so it's for me, it's a lot of the preparation beforehand. And we
you know,
see
it's
people
funny.
Having to leave work.
Yeah, when I was, like I said, this was years ago, my daughter's 27, I don't remember them talking to me about breastfeeding. I remember the nurse in the hospital talking to me and trying to work with me and things like that, and, like, it hurt like hell, and I was like, oh, my God, I don't know if I can do this. This is crazy. There was a nurse, I do remember talking to me, but I don't remember the WIC thing telling me about, you know, how to breastfeed. But in my family, it was the expectation that I was going to breastfeed. Like, that was just like, okay, you know, like, I don't know, that was, you know, it was a positive thing. It was like, yes, you know, this is good for the baby, and you should do this for 6 months, and da-da-da-da. But in order for me to do that for 6 months, I didn't work for 6 months. And the crazy thing that happened, the place I worked for, the owner died. So I was able to go on unemployment, and I was able to breastfeed. But if I didn't do that, when I had to go back to work, I tried to keep breastfeeding her for, like, another 6 months, but it was extremely difficult. And I remember, like, getting engorged and just being like, oh, my God. You know, I would have to go to the bathroom and, you know, relieve myself, so to speak. Andrea, in your book, you talk about a woman, I think she was working, I don't know if it was UPS or FedEx or something, and mm-hmm. They told her that she could go in her truck and pump her breast milk. Talk to the audience about that crazy story.
I mean, right, and then it's go into the toilet, go into your FedEx truck. Like, this is just not anything we would expect. Right, it's not sanitary, it's not reasonable, it's not logistically possible. You know, we need a complete overhaul of thinking about work and family life and just life, right? And this needs to be a priority. We all were babies, we all, you know, needed nourishment. That's how a society thrives. And we're just caught up in this very work-intense way of looking at things that doesn't accommodate this. And, you know, it's racism, it's misogyny, sexism, right? This is a woman's thing, so it's not prioritized. But it hurts everybody.
You talk also about how the U.S. hasn't signed up for the World Health Organization's guidelines. Has the U.S. government ever said why? Has it changed with different presidents that maybe they would? And tell the audience what that code is, or what the WHO was saying should happen with breastfeeding.
Yeah, there's an international code that says you don't do things like advertise formula to pregnant people, right? We have a system here where you've got Target sending formula samples to people who buy pregnancy tests, right? And then, like, surprising their family with the knowledge that they're pregnant,
like, what?
When they didn't even tell them. All kinds of, like, shenanigans going on there, right? That are in most countries not legal if they have signed on to the code. But the U.S. won't sign on to that code because there's so much support for formula from the government. We had at the World Health Assembly a couple of summers ago, Ecuador tried to put forth a resolution promoting breastfeeding, and the U.S. went
and threatened. Oh, my God, that was crazy. I read that in your book.
Yeah. So, this is just a classic case of the government being in bed with a company, trying to help them make money at the expense of people everywhere. It's profit over people.
Now, Jabina, we are getting close to our time. What are some things a woman can do if she's pregnant now? What can she do to prepare for breastfeeding, and where should she go after she has her baby to get support?
I think preparing looks like finding out, you know, who your support people are. You know, oftentimes we'll say a breastfeeding class, but I think yes, taking a class, but also finding out your village, the people who are going to support you in the postpartum period, I think is key. Finding that tribe.
Should their partners go? Let me ask you this. If they are married or in a relationship, should the male or female partner go? I don't want to put a gender, you know, whoever their partner is, should they go also?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think absolutely. So your partner should go. If you have a sister girlfriend, I always say bring your sister girlfriend or your cousin or so often your aunt. Whoever is going to be there with you to support you in the postpartum period should be that person. And then, again, finding your tribe, finding people who building community, other parents, other new moms, other new parents who are will likely be going through the same thing or who've recently gone through the same thing. In Philadelphia, we host Bay Culture. We host Bay Cafes, which is breastfeeding awareness and empowerment, every Tuesday virtually. And so we have a community of primarily Black women in the city of Philadelphia who support one another with breastfeeding. And so, and not just breastfeeding, right? But a lot of the new parenting woes that come with it, because that too, an emotional and mental health can affect lactation. And so I think it's really important that you find, who those people are and who what the resources are in your community.
Andrea, in your book, you talk about selling breast milk. Really? I mean, tell us to the audience about this. What would that look like? Is that a good thing? Because some people can't produce milk. Talk to us about that.
It can be. So, I mean, in some ways, it's very similar to the wet nursing or exploitation of the past, right, where there are companies that are making a fortune off selling breast milk, but they're paying women very little for it. And this is another industry that's targeting Black women. But, you know, there's also more informal ways to get breast milk if you need it through even Facebook groups and other kind of online groups, right, where people want to. But it's all very controversial because some of it is processed and pasteurized and some of it is just passed off between people. So there's a lot to think about there.
Yeah, I thought that was crazy. One of the interesting things is you said in United Arab Emirates, they require their mothers to nurse for 2 years. And if they can't, the government will provide a wet nurse. Is that positive or negative, do you think? And is that something that would be good for America?
I think that whenever you take choice away from people completely, it's not a good thing, right?
Because,
We should all be free. And really the point of breastfeeding advocacy, I think, particularly in relation to race and racism, is that we want everyone to have a full and clear choice.
Right.
And so that if you want it, you can do it. So I wouldn't advocate for taking away choice from anybody for any reason there, but more support would definitely be a good thing.
Well, I thank you guys so much for coming on this morning. Andrea Freeman, I'm going to be giving away some copies of your book. It's a really great story. And as Javina said, showing historical situation of breastfeeding and formula and how it impacted the African-American community. At the end of your book, you also provide different resources for women to go to. And I think that was a really nice touch at the end to have that. Javina, thank you so much. Javina, where can people reach you on social media?
On social media, you can find me at The Lactation Therapist, and my website is thelactationtherapist.com.
And Andrea, are you on social media, or should people just go to the university?
Yeah, you can reach me there. I've got a Twitter, A Freeman Law Prof. Not too active, but I'll try to get more active. So.
Yeah, people I'm sure are going to have questions about this book. I mean, you know, it's great. I can see a follow-up, you know, to it because it's, like you said, the incidents are still happening now. But thank you both for coming on this morning. I hope you guys have a great weekend, okay?
Thank you for having
awesome
us. It was great to talk to you both.
Thank you. You guys, thank you for listening. I hope you guys will stay tuned and follow me on social media at Joy Keys, on Twitter, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, on Facebook, and Saturdays with Joy Keys on Instagram. You can also email me, because you're going to have to email me if you want to win a copy of Andrea's book, Skim. So follow on social media. Thank you so much for your support, and you guys have a great weekend.
Stigma may not directly affect you,
but it harms the 1 in 5 Americans living with mental health conditions,
which prevents millions of people from seeking help.
So do yourself and everyone a favor.
Go to curestigma.org and get tested for stigma.